sahana bhavatu, sahana punaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadetamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Got to finish it? I think we finished 20. The Anoraniyan Mahato Mahiyan. The smaller than the smallest and greater than the greatest.
Yeah.
So we'll do chapter 1, second section, the Adhyaya 1, Vali 2, and verse 21. Asino duram vrajati. Asino duram vrajati. Shayano yati sarvataha. Shayano yati sarvataha. Kastam madamadam devam. Kastam madamadam devam. Varanyo gnyatum arhati. Varanyo gnyatum arhati. Asinaha duram vrajati. Shayanaha yati sarvataha. Kaha tam mada amadam madamadam devam mad anyaha nyatum arhati. Asinaha means sitting, duram vrajati, sitting, the atma, the self, goes far. Duram is a great distance. So seated, it goes very far. Asinaha duram vrajati. Shayanaha, sleeping. Shayanaha was laying down sleeping. There's a, you're laying in a prone position. It's just, you're falling asleep. So you're sleeping. Shayanaha, sleeping. Yati sarvataha. He goes everywhere. He seems, the atma seems to be everywhere. Yati sarvataha. Kahatam madamadam devam mad anyaha gnyatum arhati. Yaha, kaha means who. Who, mad, this is Yama talking. Who, mad anyaha, other than me, who except me, gnyatum arhati, is capable to know this, is capable of knowing that atma, tam, which is both madha and amada, both joy and sorrow, devam, that self-effulgent one, that one conscious being, that is both joy and sorrow, seated, traveling far, sleeping, going everywhere. Who can possibly know this other than me? Because if you remember, Nachiketas came to one of the questions when Nachiketas asked for his third boon, and Yama kept trying to talk him out of it. Nachiketa said, no one is a better teacher than you. You are the one to teach me, because nobody else knows this. It's not within their means of knowledge to know this. And so now Yama says, well, who actually can know this other than me? That there's another way to take it. So it's very nice. So asinaha duram vrajati. So now, the thing to understand here, what is mitya means everything that exists within time and space, all of the duality, this body, mind, sense organs, everything that we experience, subject, object, all activity, all of that is mitya. When you say it's mitya, it has no being at all other than the self. So the only one here really is the atma. But from the standpoint of this upadi, which is nothing other than the atma, just like the pot is nothing other than the clay. This is nothing other than the atma. But from the standpoint of the upadi, you can say, seated, sitting, he goes everywhere. You know, he's both seated. So from the you take it this way, he's both seated, like you're seated, you're seated, you're seated. But then lucky, oh boy, he's really sleeping. But others can be going very far, right? That's one way to take it. Also, Shayanaha, sleeping, when a person is sleeping, he appears to be, for one who is sleeping, everywhere, because there is no duality in deep sleep. So there's no particular place where I am here, or I am here, or I am here. In deep sleep, you can't differentiate subject and object. So in fact, there is no place where you are not, because there is no place, right, in deep sleep. And so because there's no duality, there's no experience of difference. So you just simply are everywhere, even though there is no there there. There is no everywhere, right? Because there's no objectification, there's no time and space, but there's no way to differentiate yourself to say you're on this side or that side or up or down. Also, you can say with the asinaha, seated in the sukshma sharira, seated in this body, mind, sense organs, and in the dream state also, in both the waking and the dream state, you're awake to this duality, right? You yourself, not going anywhere, go everywhere, right? I go here, and then I go here, and then I go here. I'm traveling all over the place. The same is true in the dream state. I take a body in the dream state, and even though I am seated, I'm not moving, I am going everywhere. From here to here to here, I'm going far. Right? But then, in the third one, in the Shayanaha, sleeping, I'm not going far. There's no place where I am not, because there's no expression of duality. Okay? So he's got the waking, dream, and deep sleep in this first line. And then he says that devam means the one who is self-effulgent, who is self-shining, who is consciousness. This conscious being, tam, this atma, which is devam, which is conscious being, which is also free, sometimes happy, mada, happy, complete, satisfied, sometimes amada. Amada means not feeling complete, not feeling happy, not feeling satisfied. So now this is mada from the standpoint of the upadis, sometimes happy, sometimes sad. Some upadis are happy, some upadis are sad. So all of the dualities are happening all at the same time, contradicting each other. Okay? And even from my own standpoint, all of my experiences are contradictory. It's interesting. Am I happy, or am I a happy person, or am I a sad person? Am I still, or am I moving? Am I everywhere, or am I in one place? You know? How can anyone possibly figure this out? With the pramanas, with the means of knowledge that we have at our disposal. And so in the teaching of this Upanishad, Yama himself says, who can possibly understand this except for me? But what he means is, except for me, according to Shankara and also to Swamiji, he could be going back to kind of playing off what Nachiketa had said. You're the only one who can really, there's nobody better than you to teach me this. And he said, yeah, well, who could understand this other than me? You know, but it's really, who can understand this, you know, who doesn't have the proper qualifications to see it? That's why he had put Nachiketas through so many tests, so to speak, and he was so pleased with him at the end. He felt and he said, you are really an adhikari. You are really capable of gaining this knowledge, you know. And in a way, that's saying you are like me. In fact, he said earlier, you're better than I am. You are better than I am because I really worked to get this Lord Yamastanam. You know? You're not going that route because you see the mityatva of it. You see the uselessness of it. You can go to this Swargaloka, it itself is, or to a particular stanam, a particular loka, to get a high position within the samsara. But it's still samsara. It's still filled with all kinds of problems. Still filled with all kinds of problems. And so Yama said Yama had to go to get this stanam first. And stanam means this position first. And then afterwards he got knowledge. You know. So he had to go through a lot of bells and whistles, do a lot of tapas, do a lot of upasana, and years of tapas in order to get to that higher level of samsara. You realized it here itself, you know. So in that way, you were better than me. He told Nachiketas that. So the Maranyaha, other than me, who's able to know this, means there are certain qualifications to even wanting this knowledge. Most people do not want it at all. It has no interest. It's not interesting. You know, it's only when you have realized that all of your aspirations and all of the things that you're working on to become a full, happy person will not work. You know, they just won't, because you're looking for happiness in things that are impermanent. Everything about you is impermanent. Every part of your upadhi is impermanent and changing, and everything that you're seeking is impermanent and changing. So it's just impossible to line things up correctly, to keep everything in line in such a way that now you can say, okay, this is it. Now I'm happy. This is exactly how I want it. We all experience this, and we all experience the finitude of these happy moments. And at some point in time, which is very rare and very unusual, you have this horrifying dark night of the soul when you realize this isn't going to work. It's not going to work, not because of any fault of my own, but because of the very nature of the creation. And it's at that time when you really get that, you become a mumukshu. And you want to know if there is a solution to this problem. Is it possible for me to say, everything that needs to be done has been done. I am ananda, I am free. Nothing will ever happen to me. Is there any way that I can reach that type of stability? You know, that becomes that person who's truly asking that question seriously, you know, rather than my mom saying, honey, I don't have those kind of problems, you know, or just thinking it's a philosophical exercise, you know. It can just be a philosophical exercise. But that won't work. Because if it's a philosophical exercise, you just really don't care. You just care academically. You don't care about your own being. And so to come to that position where you really want to know, you know, is very, very rare. And then you have to think of it like this also. Nobody really can know in terms of the means of knowledge you have at your disposal. The means of knowledge you have at your disposal will give you knowledge, you know, and very sophisticated knowledge, endless knowledge of the nature of the universe, the nature of what is going on within duality. Your body, mind, sense organs is contained within duality, and it's made as part of duality, subject-object relationship. That's what it can do, and it can do it very, very well. Yeah. But it's not going to give you what you're seeking. That's why I love that little video I saw by Jim Carrey, who said to the funny, when he said, "I wish you were all could yeah. you know experience yeah. what I have," to realize that it's not going to help. To have all of this wealth, all of this fame, all of this power, to have everything that you could possibly want. And then getting all of that, you realize that you're still not happy. You're still not full. You're still not complete. You know, because the completeness, the ananda, the wholeness does not exist out here. It only exists as your own swarup, as your own nature. So in fact, to the degree that you're enjoying all of these things out here, it's really just a distraction to give you little sukhavrittis. You know, little sukhavritti, 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 sukhavritti. But the sukhavritti is not you. That's the thing. The sukhavritti still is mithya. It is not you. So even the sukhavritti is not enough. Besides, there's the sorrow always behind the sukhavritti, because you know that it's not lasting. You know. So you're trapped. You're trapped within the samsara. And that he said it so nicely. You all have to become wealthy, get everything conceivable. Even a nice family, good children, get everything. Everything you can possibly have. I've got that. And you do realize that it's still not what you're looking for. So it all boils down to the mumukshutvam, which then has to convert into jignasa, the desire to know. Because you have to realize that there's nothing that you can do to gain to gain something which is free from time. There's nothing that you can do, because all doing takes place in time. And so what it amounts to, there's this realization that the teacher actually usually makes you understand and makes that conversion between from mumukshutvam to jignasa, the desire to know. You have to realize that either you already are free and you don't know it, or you will never be free. That's the choice. Because if you aren't already free by your nature, you are by nature existing within time and space. And if you're existing within duality, then you are by your nature subject to birth and death and change. Just like every single aspect of this upadis, your body, mind, sense organs, you can't say, now, for me to really be free, you all have to stop. You have to stop. You know, it's like we have to take a snapshot and we have to hold it there. We have to get that sacred moment, take a snapshot, and freeze it. There is no such possibility. Nor is there this idea of living forever in terms of this physical body. Not going to happen. So either the wholeness, you are the wholeness and the well-being that you seek, or you're a samsari. Means you're in the cycle of birth, death, in that cycle of change, and you have to learn how to deal with it. Kind of like the Buddhists have learned how to deal with it. Don't cling to anything. The practice of non-clinging. The instant you cling, you'll suffer. Don't cling. Walk around, don't cling. That's a way to be in the world, which is effective, you know, except it's a practice. The problem with it is it gives you a mind that has shanti as long as you can do that practice. It doesn't give you a self. Right? It gives you a mind that has shanti because you've learned, because of really meditation on the Four Noble Truths, you understand very thoroughly that everything is really a dukkha yoni. And what makes it a womb of dukkha, a womb of suffering, is clinging. You know, ignorance and clinging. And so you have to let go of that in order to have palatable vrittis. You know. But you're still in the world of vrittis. You're still in the world of change, but you're dealing with the world of change in a way that can liberate you from it, seemingly, as long as you don't cling. Anyway, that's a big topic. But what I'm saying is that if there is any freedom from you that isn't like a spirit being, what one very elderly student I had many years ago, his name was Mark. He must have been in his late 70s or 80s, mid-80s maybe. And he grew up in the Ramakrishna Mission as kind of a priest or a sadhu in there. And he said, we're just spiritual maintenance men.
It's a great expression.
Isn't that it? Because he didn't, until he knew. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just you're managing this and managing that and managing this. But it's still samsara, you know. Still samsara. There's no freedom in it. So either you have to remove the ajnanam that makes you think that you're not free, you know, or you're not free. Get a grip. Do what's necessary to make the best of it. That's a choice. That's it. Okay. So, having said that, let's go to the next verse.
Ashariram shariresu anavasteshvavastitam mahantam vibhamatmanam.
mahantam vibhum atmanam matva dhiro nashochati matva dhiro nashochati ashariram sharireshu anavasteshu avastitam mahantam vibhum atmanam matva dhiraha nashochati. Says ashariram let's go to the second line first. Dhiraha nishojati. Dhiraha means the wise person, the one who has viveka, the one who has knowledge. Dhiraha nishojati. That wise person, the one who has knowledge, the one who has viveka. Dhiraha nishojati. That one doesn't grieve. That one doesn't have sorrow. Dhiraha nishojati. Matva, having known the Atma, Atmanam, Mahantam, Vibhum, Atmanam, having known, having recognized, having contemplated upon, you know, the Nididhyasana, having really recognized, having recognized the Self as Mahantam, as Mahantam means great, infinite, Vibhum means all-pervasive, means the Self is infinite, all-pervasive, like the clay is all-pervasive to the pot. It means there's no place where the Atma is not. In fact, everything has its being in the Atma. So that's the Mahantam, infinite, Vibhum, all-pervasive Atma. So having known that Self, which is infinite, Mahantam, nothing greater, and all-pervasive, having recognized that Self, which is ashariram, without a body, sharira is body, like stula sharira, physical body, sukshma sharira, the subtle body. This is ashariram. You know how a negates in Sanskrit. So ashariram, sharireshu, in all of the bodies, the one who has no body, right? So that's the beautiful thing. One who has no body cannot be contained, right? Like say if you have a pot, you can drop a pebble in a pot, and then the pot contains the pebble, you know. Or you can pour water into the pot contains the water. But what about something that has no form at all? Asharira, it's got no form, nama rupa, no rupa. You take away, the body is gone. So say it's no rupa, it has no form. So that which has no form cannot be contained by any sharira, by any body. And so the one who has no body, that which the Atma, which has no body, right, is there in every body. It's just like, if we use the drishtanta, the illustration of space, space has no body, right? The thing is with space, it can be differentiated from air and fire and water, the other four elements. So it's not the Atma, right? But it's one of these drishtantas that we use in the Upanishad. Space has no form, it has no body, no rupa, and so nothing can contain it. And so everybody exists in space, and space exists in everybody, right? In the sense that it pervades everything, right? But not contained by anything. So you are the adhishtana even of space. You're the being, the Self of space. Space is objectifiable, right? So you are more subtle even than space, because awareness pervades space, you know? So if awareness pervades space and space pervades everything within duality, then your being more subtle and pervasive to space itself, is also pervasive to the entire Maya, to the entire manifestation of the creation. Right, because what's going to contain it? So he says, what's going to contain you? Ashariram sharireshu. So this Self that I am, that is limitless and all-pervasive, is there in all bodies, sharireshu, locative plural. So having no body is there in all bodies. And anavasteshu, anavasta, like we say in one of the teaching prakriyas, the teaching methodologies, the Avastha Traya Sakshi, the one who is the witness of the three states of experience. So here, if they say, when they say Anavastha, Anavasteshu, what they mean here is all of the Avastas, there is no one Avastha. Like, this is the state. Right? There is no one state. So every Anavastha means this. There's this state and this state and this state and this state. There is no single being, no single experience, no single vritti, no single emotion, no single waking state. Waking state is replaced by dream state, is replaced by deep sleep state. This vritti is this vritti, this state of experience is replaced by this state of experience, which is replaced by this state of experience. So here the anavasteshu, in all of these changing conditions, what? The one who is avastitam, the one who is abiding there. It's like the underlying adhishtana. Adhishtana means the satyam of the mitya, that which is abiding there, illumining in the sat-chit, the conscious being, that is stable amidst all of these changing states of experience. So me, the unembodied one, who is the adhishtana, right? That the truth of the mitya, what the mitya totally depends on for its being. So I am the stability which is abiding, changelessly abiding, as all of these anavastas, these changing states of experience, are coming my way. Okay? So he says, ashariresu should ashariram shariresu anavasteshu avastitam mahantam vibhum atmanam matva diraha nashochati. Why diraha nashochati? Because there is nothing else but me. There is nothing else but me, and I don't change. It's a really an amazing thing to think about. All these anavastas, every experience that exists within duality, there's two things to recognize. Every experience, and more than that, but I mean right now, every experience that you have comes into being and goes out of being. That's its nature. Every thought you have, every mood you have, every emotion you have, every gain you have, every relationship you have, every experience that you have comes into being, goes out of being, comes into being, goes out of being. Being doesn't come into being and go out of being. And being is unembodied. My being is unembodied. I am not contained by any experience. I'm not embodied, or I'm not a pea in a pod. I'm not contained. Right? So the self that I am, being non-dual in terms of satya mitya, mitya doesn't add a second thing to me. And so that means my being has no borders. There is no place for another thing. And so what is my nature? Like, I can say my nature is mahantam. It's my nature is infinite. It's vibhum. It's all pervasive. I'm unembodied. You know, I'm the adhishtana of all experiences. And so recognizing that, the wise person does not grieve. But for the wise person to not grieve is to recognize that this one, who is really all that there is the very ananda that I seek. This verse doesn't mean anything unless I resolve into my own nature. Like, for instance, if I say that wise man doesn't grieve because he has recognized that Atma. So let's put it differently. He is, because tam atmanam. The dira, so third person, the diraha doesn't grieve having realized tam atmanam, matva, having realized tam atmanam, that self, which is non-dual, basically, infinite and all-pervasive, not embodied, and the very adhishtana, the very basis of all experience. But for that to be meaningful, I have to recognize that this self, which is priyam, which is most dear, right? The self which is most dear, the self that I don't want to die, the self that I go to my teacher and ask, who am I? Is there anything about me? Do I survive death? You know, that really I want to know who I am and if I'm going to die, or can I live forever? You know, is it possible for me to live forever, or am I going to die? You're asking that because you don't want to die. And you don't want to die because you're not miserable. You don't want to die because your nature is ananda. You don't want to, you want to go into deep sleep so that you can get rid of all of the distractions, including subject object, including the ahankar, get rid of all distractions, so I can just simply be, because there is nothing more beloved than me. So that's the understanding I have to have to understand this verse, because when he says tam atmanam, having recognized myself as mahantam, this self that I want, that I don't want to die, having recognized this self as non-dual, basically, as the very adhishtana of the whole creation, the wise person doesn't grieve. Why? Because nothing will ever happen to me. Nothing, no matter even these dukkha vrittis, they don't matter. Even the dukkha vrittis, it's like clouds wisping through, which I illumine. That's the big understanding. These clouds that are passing through, the thunderstorms, all of the tumultuous situations that are coming my way, all of those things don't touch me at all. Not at all. That's viveka. I recognize that my being is not being touched, changed, or harmed in any way by all of these experiences that are coming and going. You know, nothing can ever happen to me. And so my mind, recognizing the stability of myself, doesn't grieve. What am I going to grieve for? To grieve, I have to project the ananda of myself onto something that's mitya. I have to actually project the clay onto the pot. It's a ridiculous projection, but that's what it amounts to. I have to project myself onto myself, you know, because the mitya has no being of its own. And so I'm projecting something that is already non-dual, you know. So this, the projector and the projected are all existing within mitya. So mitya is projecting on mitya, like that. But I recognize the one who's the adhishtana of mitya. And so I recognize the one who's the adhishtana of this body, mind, sense organs, and all the duality that I experience. And so my mind, my buddhi, enjoying myself, experiencing Ishwara with vairagya. I experience this creation with vairagya, which allows it to be Ishwara. Without the vairagya, I'm a jiva. But every time there's a little lack of vairagya, the jiva's head comes up immediately, because it's a little piece of ajnanam, right? That lack of vairagya is a little piece of ajnanam. That little piece of ajnanam is the jiva. Right? And then I'm living as a little person in this world who needs this and who needs that and needs to be protected in this way and in that way. And then I suffer. And then if that suffering happens, that's a sadhana. Then I have to say, it's okay, come home. You have to come back home. You know, I have to bring my mind back to my knowledge. The instant the jiva raises its head, there's a problem. It's built in. There's not much you can do about it. Okay, good. So, except recognize. What you can do about it is recognize it. And the recognizing it is the cure. Right? So, let's do this verse 23. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyaha Nayam atma pravachanena labhyaha Nametayatna bahuna shrutena Nametayatna bahuna shrutena Yame vaishafrinute tena labhyaha Yame vaishafrinute tena labhyaha Tasyaisha atma vivrnute tenum swam Tasyaisha atma vivrnute tenum swam Na ayam atma pravachanena labhyaha Na medhaya na bahuna shrutena Yam eva eshaha vrnute tena labhyaha Tasya eshaha atma vivrnute tenum swam. Shankara introduces this verse. He says, Yadyapi durvigneha ayam atma tatapi upayena suvigneha eva iti aha. You see, previously in this verse that we, it's a couple of verses that we just did, this, who else but me can know that, know this knowledge? Shankara says, even though this Atma, this self, is durvigneha, it's very difficult to know. Because it's not an object to know, right? It's my own self. How am I going to know it? I'm already here. I don't have the means of knowledge for it. So even though it's very, this Atma is durvigneha, very difficult to know, tatapi still, suvigneha eva itiha, still, it is very easy to know. Even then, it is very suvigneha, it's very easy to know upayena, when the proper means is there. Right? If you have the proper upaya, the proper means for knowing, then it's very easy to know. But without that proper means the pramana, without the pramana, then it's very difficult to know. How are you going to know? You can't experience yourself any more than you're experiencing yourself. Even without knowledge, with no knowledge, you're still only the Atma. You know, you're not somebody else. You're only the Atma. But you have the self experience, you have your own self experience, but through the lens of your body, mind, sense organs, you know, the body, mind, sense organs own that experience. And why shouldn't it? Why shouldn't it? Because there's no time that the mind is not having you as its adhishtana. No time at all, ever. If the mind is there, you are there as its adhishtana. Why should not the mind say, I am this conscious being? So now this mind, which is now embodied in the physical body, says, I, this conscious being, is there anything about me that survives death? You know? Because I know my mind is always changing. I know my body is always changing. But they say that you go to heaven and this, that. What is it about me that survives? So how am I going to answer that? The Atma doesn't talk. The Atma isn't going to say, listen, this is what's really going on. It's not going to say that. Right? It'll just simply be. Right? And the mind, how is the mind going to answer the question? You know, it's very difficult. You need an upaya. You need a means to handle this. If you have the proper means, then suvigneha. Couldn't be easier because you're already here. It's not like you have to go anywhere to find it, to learn about, to reach yourself. Like we don't have to travel to ourselves. We're already completely present. So you just need the proper means, and then no problem, suvigneha. So, but now what he says, na ayam atma pravachanena labhyaha. He says, this self na labhyaha, this self isn't gained pravachanena by reciting over and over again all the Vedas. Even if you memorize all of the Vedas, even all the Upanishads, and you recite them over and over again, it's not going to help. What if we say, you recite all of the Vedas, you study all of the Vedas, recite all the Upanishads, everything. Recite, think about them, look into them. You can do that forever, and it is not going to help. Namedhya. Also, your medha shakti means your capacity to really think about it, recall, remember it, your medha shakti, your ability to retain all of these things that you've chanted and read and learned by heart, and then memorize them, and you have that ability to not only memorize them, but to think about them. Namedhya. That also is not going to, the self is not also going to be gained with that either. Na bahuna shrutena, nor is the Atma going to be gained by any amount of listening, by any amount of shravana. Shravana means hearing the Vedas, hearing the Upanishads. It depends on how I'm hearing, right? If I'm hearing them, they're being recited. They're being as though taught, you know. So you're learning them. You're learning them academically. Like, say, I can memorize the whole Upanishad. The Indians can actually do this easily, actually. It's not very hard for them because they have tremendous medha shakti. And so they can memorize all of the Upanishads. And I know students, you know, especially in my first and second courses in the 70s, they could recite all of the Upanishads, you know, and even commentaries. And they'd have it all absolutely fingertip, you know. Swamiji was like that too. He had it all, even before he had knowledge, he had such medha shakti that he had everything by heart, you know. And these people even memorize and get by heart, even the commentaries and the commentaries of the commentaries. It's just vast. And he says no amount of recitation, no amount of medha shakti, no amount of listening, you know, will give you this self. Na yam atma labhyah. This self is not going to be gained by any of this. Yam eva eshah vrinute tena labhyah. He says, there's different ways to take this. It is that one alone who chooses, eshaha vrinute, who chooses that one, the whom that one, the adhikari, chooses, by him it is gained. This is so interesting. Let me read the next part and then I'll explain it. Tasya esha atma, this to him, this atma, vivrinute, reveals its own form, its own nature. Okay? So, first of all, eshaha vrinute, yam eva, the one whom, means the atma, okay, the one whom, this eshaha adhikari, the adhikari chooses, that one, the adhikari, the qualified student, chooses to know, the one who, the adhikari chooses to know, okay? It is by that one who the adhikari chooses to know, is by that one that it is obtained. For him, this atma reveals its own nature. Okay, so let me just, there's other ways to take, two or three other ways to take this, but they all amount to the same thing. What it amounts to is this. You are what you seek. You already are completely what you seek. So there is no new experience to be gained. So if you are listening and memorizing and reciting all within samsara, right? All within samsara. That you're going to gain a whole collection of knowledge, but it's not going to be you. So all of these, or the Upanishads and your medha shakti, all of this has to be utilized in a particular way.
The Upanishads themselves have to be utilized in a particular way to help the adhikari recognize the one who is there. It's a recognition of the self that is already there. And that self is already the shining on its own accord. I'm already shining exactly as I am. I'm not covered at all from my own standpoint. There is no covering. And there is no covering, actually, there's no, even from the standpoint of ajnanam, self-ignorance, the self-experience is not covered, like putting a sheet over it or a bag over it or something. There's no, ajnanam is not something physical. So there is no physical covering or no physical dimming or darkening or anything like that. There is simply the misidentification of my own full, complete, shining presence with the upadis, body, mind, sense organs. It's a misidentification. It is not a covering. It's like if we use our clay pot, the clay is not covered by the pot in any way at all. But the pot, which is fragile, takes itself to be the clay. Whereas from the standpoint of the clay, there's only clay here. There's no pot at all. Right? There's no pot. There's only clay. That's mitya. This is the mitya here. So like that, there is nothing to cover me. There's nothing to cover my self-experience. Even the greatest dukkha vrittis are not covering me. It's like saying this thunderstorm, this rain, dark, dark rain cloud with all of the lightning and thunder is covering me, the sun. It's not covering me, the sun. I, the sun, am illumining the rain cloud. So we always tend to put ourselves onto the beach, you know, looking up at the stormy clouds which are covering the sun. But that's not what's happening here. I am the sun. Right? So I'm not being covered. Nothing can cover me. I'm the luminary. So whatever comes in my wake is illumined. It has nothing to do with covering me. But if I'm looking at myself from the standpoint of the upadi, then I am taking myself to be one with whatever is going on in that upadi. Right? Now this identification is called this dehatma buddhi, this total identification of the upadi, the conditioning adjunct, with me, right, that is causing all of the problem. And so no amount of listening, no amount of study, you know, no amount of shravana, we don't think of it as the shravana that we know, no amount of listening, no amount of applying my vast medha shakti, you know, no amount of accruing with this Vedanta vasana, we call it, you know, more and more study, more and more study, more and more study, read more and more commentaries, get more and more logic down, all this. It does nothing. It does nothing other than let me accrue a great deal of knowledge within Vyavahara, within empirical reality. But that is not what is going to give me self-knowledge. Self-knowledge has to do with, if the pramana is being handled, say the Upanishad is being handled, what actually happens is the one who chooses to know this, the adhikari who wants to, I want to know myself, for that one, this self, the self itself reveals itself. It reveals itself, true, because the pramana is pointing to it, right? But the one that has to be recognized is the one that is already fully present. Right? I'm already fully present. And so that's the one that reveals itself to the mind. But the mind itself is directed to that recognition. That's true when the pramana is being handled. But when the pramana is being handled, then what happens is the mind differentiates its own mityatva from me, and I become dominant. Like right now, you are completely dominant. But the mind doesn't recognize that because it has owned your being to belong to it. But once the mityatva of the mind becomes apparent, myself, free of the mitya, becomes dominant in my experience. Otherwise, I'm exactly the same as before, but the mind has ownership. The vrittis in the mind have ownership of me, right? Now what happens is the vrittis in the mind have become mitya, and I recognize my stable self. So this tanum means my own form, my own being. So my own being, how does he say this here? The Atma reveals its own being. Right? This Atma reveals its own being to him. To him is who? To him whom? To him, the one who has chosen it. That's really, to me, it's really beautiful. That's the Adhikari. The words, none of the words and all of the scholarship and all of this, you know, it's all nice and fun and all of that. But it's not gaining self-knowledge. All of these things have to resolve into your being. It has to work as a pramana. Okay, I think that's enough. That's three verses. Swasti prajapyath paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmane pyashubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukino pavantu kale varshatu parjanyaha prithivi sasya shalini desho yam kshoparahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschid dukha bhag bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amatangamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Harihi Om. From Danya. Radha, do you remember there is some saying, I believe, in the teaching which goes something like, the path is sukha and the goal is sukha. I think there is one more thing which is listed as being sukha along with the path and goal. No, I don't know, but that sounds really, if you find it, show me. I've heard Swamiji say something like that. I didn't know that it was a verse, though. So if you find the verse, I'd like to see it, too.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So you David. Talked earlier about, when you were talking about the first verse, in the first verse we went over tonight, about the, that, you know, people come to this recognition, like, almost like, horrified that this whole thing isn't going to work, so then that's the beginning of the mumukshu.
Yeah.
So what I was wondering is this kind of like a wake-up call or recognition is that an absolute, or in other words, running out the track on my attempt to make life work through everything I know, whatever you want to call that, is that necessary every time? Are there people that just from birth, they just go right to Mumukshutvam without going through trying all this stuff and failing, but they just like, that's their bent. I just want to know the truth, and they didn't go through the problem.
In fact, they talk about that. It's not necessarily that you have to go through some catastrophic events in order to recognize this. You can very calmly recognize the fact that it can't work. And depending upon the samskaras that you come in with, what you recognized in your last life, your level of maturity right now, you don't have to be hit over the head, you know, with some catastrophic event in order to recognize this problem. Because even if life is going smoothly, it still doesn't work. Even if you're a Dharmanishta, it still doesn't work, you know, in terms of being able to just say, all is well with me. Because there's still a duality, there's a separation between you and Ishvara. That itself is very painful, and you have no idea what's going on. You don't know who you are. You don't know who God is. You don't know what this creation is. So you may have some shanti because of your dharma and some fullness, but that fullness has underneath it this cloud of unknowing. Anything that you need to know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, great. Cool.
Okay.
So this book, the translations that are given, you know, they seem to differ in pretty significant meanings from the way that you're teaching it, and it seems like the difference is that there's a lot of language in here that seems kind of like duality, like who but I can know that deity, you know?
Because they don't know how to... We don't know what words to use. The word for deity is devam.
Yeah.
So, what do we mean by devam? Do we mean the atma is a deva, a deity?
Right.
So that's why these words have, whether no matter what you how you translate devam, you have to unfold it. So if he's going to translate devam like a devata, a deity, then who is that deity? Are you a deity up in the heavens or? So the whole problem, see, even if you're teaching directly from the Sanskrit, you still have to define these words, because all of the words are just going to have layman's definitions that exist within samsara.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a lot of work to make all of these words work. And then when you're reading a translation, and you already have your own meanings for all those words, then it's really difficult. Yeah. At least in the Sanskrit, those meanings have some... They still have to be unfolded, but they still have some history, some meaning, you know, for those who know Sanskrit. And well, everybody, have a wonderful night. I'll see you on Sunday. We won't be in class on Saturday, but we'll put our classes online, whatever we do here. Okay, see everybody. I'm out the door. Good night.